Dr. Alan Leica here, and I'd like to welcome you to How to Live a Fantastic Life Show, where we will be discussing the important aspects of your life. We hope to inspire you to live the best life you can. Get out of your comfort zone and explore the awesome world around you. Break through your barriers. Take inspired action. Use the difficulties in your life to achieve the best version of you. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to like our next guest. Her name is Dawn J. Rasmussen, and she's a CPA, which stands for a Certified Public Accountant, and a CFE, a Certified Fraud Examiner. And she's the author of the novel, 12 for 12. Dawn inspires, empowers, and strengthens organizations with relevant, formidable fraud training that wows. Over the course of her career, she has come to realize that ordinary people can actually use some of the things that fraudsters do in their life to help people live a fantastic life. And she looks forward to showing you how. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here today.
Tell me, how did you get on this journey?
Well, I was always a little bit like this from the day I was born. Excuse me. I feel like I was born with this little inbuilt radar that I've always found fraud. Like every job I've ever had, whether it was working at the cinnamon roll shop as a teenager to a tax auditor as an adult or as a corporate controller, I've always, everywhere I go, I just always seem to run into some fraud. And that's kind of the beginning for me. But during my last year of grad school, I kind of realized that I should take this more professionally. And so I got certified as a fraud examiner, which is similar to getting my CPAs, which is like another four-part test for that. But the interesting part of that to me was the study of criminology. And I've come to like develop ways that people can use those skills that a criminal would use against them from a fraudster's perspective in order to better their own lives in an ethical way. So,
well, that's important. Now, you say that fraud is all around us and people are always that there's always some sort of fraud. You found that in all your jobs. Can you elaborate a little bit on about what you found in those things?
Sure. So my first clerk job out of school was, I don't know how much I can say without getting myself like, you know, being in breach of confidentiality here, but, basically I was in charge of the inventory. That was one of my duties. And the controller and I were arguing about it because I knew something was wrong and I kept clamping down on these controls and later, like if he finally said, I'm taking this duty away from you because I don't want to discuss it anymore. And everybody is sick of your controls. But then on my very first day working, doing some tax audit work, they had never called my references. So they called up my old boss there and was like, hey, can we get a reference on this person? He's like, you go get her right now. I'll give you your reference. And so they hauled me in and he's like, do you remember all those arguments we had about the inventory? He's like, and he was saying that there was some fraud there. And the only reason that they were able to prosecute was because of my because of my crazy controls. And he's like, there's your reference. You decide if you should hire her.
So there you go. So obviously you found that. Now, you actually wanted to not only find fraud, but you wanted to find the tricks that people used so that people can use them in their own lives so that people can actually use them for a good force, not a bad force. How did that change in perspective come?
Oh my goodness. I'm so glad you asked me that because, I mean, in the spirit of Halloween, we can almost view it as like taking a little bit of black magic and turning it into some white magic. And it came because it all started in my last semester of graduate school. I took an elective class for negotiations, and there was this day that the professor there came in and he said, "All right, ladies, I've got the men doing their own thing, and we're going to have our own discussion." And he said, "For whatever reason, you ladies are just inbuilt with this inability to ask for what you actually want in life." And he said, he gave us an assignment to go and ask for three things that we did not think we could get and that we had better get them. So we went about doing our assignment, and I'll tell you about one of them when I go through some of my steps here. But that was the beginning for me. And during my study of criminology and working fraud cases and, you know, just in the course of being who I am, I came to discover like, oh, that's a skill that I can apply here and without hurting somebody, you know. Yeah, well, so that was kind of the beginning of that.
Well, here's something that you told me is that in people asking, especially people that are fraudsters, they ask at least three or four times, often in
different ways,
because they don't take no for an answer. And that's how fraud comes about, because people feel that once they say no, it's over. But a true fraudster knows that's just the beginning. That's the opening of the door. What it means to them is it means not now or not yet. So people can use that in their lives to make it a powerful force. I think teenage kids know that when they want the keys to the car, they say, "Dad, can I have the keys to the car?" And the answer, of course, is no. And then they come up, "Dad, can I have the keys to the car?" The answer is no. And they keep on doing it until the answer is yes.
You're right. So that's why my first rule of negotiations is that no isn't no until you've heard it four times. Because a fraudster knows that every time you have to say no, it becomes harder. But once you are provoked enough to have to say it for the fourth time, they're done. So you have to be charming and smart and show why it's mutually beneficial for you to work together with somebody. Love but that. That actually leads me into my second rule. Go ahead. Were you going to ask me?
Well, I think that is a great place to start. And I think that's important to start. So I'm just going to summarize that. No isn't no until it's been asked at least four times.
It's absolutely true. So
but let's go to your second rule now.
Okay. So my second rule is it's very counterintuitive because it's about leverage. Now, a fraudster will never hesitate to use leverage against you, but he'll wait for the sweet moment to do it when it squeezes you the worst. But we don't want to think of leverage in terms of how can I squeeze somebody and make them uncomfortable. We want to see leverage as, okay, I want something from this person, but they have someone else they need to please, their customer, their audience, whoever it might be. And so if you can find a way to say, hey, this person needs this thing happening and I can serve them in that way, then that becomes leverage to you in getting what you want. And you must not hesitate to use it. For example, in my graduate school, when we did our little exercise there, I wanted to ask for to turn in a paper late. The paper was done. I didn't need to turn it in late, but I needed to do my assignment. And there was this teacher that never allowed assignment to be turned in late. So I was determined to get him to say yes. And what I did, he said no to me the first time, as expected. But then I found out that he was interested in fresh research. So I went and told him, "I have this new idea and I want to research it some more." And so I was able to get an extension on my paper. So it was about looking for and finding what the person you want something from needs in order that you can actually really truly help them. If you are actually offering something that somebody really wants, then they will come to you almost. Don't hesitate to use your leverage.
That's important. That's important. Don't hesitate to use your leverage. And I'm not sure if you know the works of a social scientist by the name of Dr. Robert Cialdini, or Cialdini, as he pronounces it. He was formerly from the University of Utah, and he wrote books all on influence and how we can influence people. Are you aware of those books at all?
I'm aware of the books about how to influence people and get what you want. I don't think that was the author. So.
Okay. Well, the person's name, he wrote the book that I'm thinking of is Influence: The Psychology of Persuasion, which was pretty groundbreaking in its work because he went through some of the things people use to influence people. And one of the examples he used for my generation was there was a group of people called Hare Krishnas that used to exist. And they used to give people a rose. And because of that, they were seeking donations. And they got so much donations. It was almost hurtful to every other religious group. So they came up with ways to prevent them from doing that.
Huh.
That is interesting on how things go and how things are. But there it is. Start a request with a gift was his other things.
That's an excellent way to think of leverage. I love it. As a gift to the person you want something from.
And another way to start a request is, let's suppose you're a salesman and you want to sell a high-priced offer. You should always couple it with a medium price and a low-priced offer, and start with the high-priced offer because most people will go and accept the medium-priced offer. That's just the way people's brains are.
That's right. And that's actually my third rule, is to ask for more than you actually want by at least 20%, because it's so much easier to come down than it is to go up. And it's the same rules as like when you're interviewing a fraudster for questioning. They never will admit to the full accountability of what they've done. But if you come in and you say, we think you took such and such dollar amount and it's like way higher than we estimate, then they'll use that as an ethical reason to add to their confession, and that, I don't look, it's not that much. And it helps them to appear more ethical than we have presumed them to be. So it's the same philosophy. It's easier to come down than to go up. And also you should think of your, what you're asking for in terms of flexibility, because you may ask for one thing, but someone may come back and say, hey, this, I could do this for you. And you find out that that's just as good a benefit as the thing you were asking for. So just be a little bit flexible there.
Yeah. And this is the thing, is you're talking about the art of negotiation and the art of getting what you want and the art of having, and some of these things are certainly done by fraudsters, but they're also part of a regular negotiation process. And they're very, very common that way, that negotiation is a negotiation, whether it's done by a fraudster or a person that's being honest. The intent is the same, is to get what you want. And so these are techniques on getting what you want.
Right. But we want to get things in a way where everybody is left off better for the purpose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So why did you name your book 12 for 12?
Okay. So Thank you for asking that. 12 for 12 is it's a fictional novel about a fraud examiner who's quirky and witty and a little bit crazy.
Sounds a bit like you.
Oh boy. I'm sorry. My video is frozen. I'm so sorry. Are you hearing me okay?
I'm hearing you just fine. Let me check the video here too. Oh, yes, you are frozen. Why don't you turn off your video for a minute?
Okay.
And then turn it back on.
Okay. And sorry to make you edit.
That's okay. This is the wonderful thing about being able to edit.
Yes.
When we get frozen things, it's probably a bandwidth problem. Dawn,
I installed a booster and it seems to be functioning.
You got it. Okay. Now, a lot of the stuff comes because you've got a lot of Bluetooth things running in your background that you don't even know that are running. And so that is dragging on your bandwidth. And then that is what's causing you to freeze at times.
Oh, I should investigate that. Okay.
For you to put in your saddlebag of tricks to learn as you more sad. Okay, we're started again.
Okay.
Go ahead.
About my book. So, she's a little bit. So I've used a lot of my expertise and stuff in that story. But the way that it ties into what I do is that I believe that if you're going to do something, just make it legendary, man. Like that's how it should be. And that book was born of a time in my life during a dark time where, I turned to the library, of course. And in the library, I found a self-help book that said, go home and record all of your angry feelings and burn them afterward. And I was like, well, I've got nothing to lose. So I did. I went home and I started writing things down. But instead of engaging in some kind of bonfire triumph, I kept writing until like one day I had produced this novel and it healed my soul. So the way it kind of fits in is that, you know, it's quirky and it's fun and it's you'll learn a ton about fraud examinations just from, you know, my characters, what she's doing. But for the most part, it's one of those legendary things in my life that helped to heal me and helped me to live a fantastic life.
Interesting. You know, it's interesting how you went through that phase in your life where you were having a downtime. Now, to me, you're a person that's pretty together and you've designed your existence by going through a CPA degree and a fraud degree. And you went through all these things and had a real positive perspective at life. But at the same time, you hit a time when you weren't able to function. Do you mind sharing a little bit about that, Dawn?
Sure. It was just, let's see. I don't think I want like this show to be about my personal grief,
why I'm asking you is there's people that are listening to this show that go through grief as well, that go through downtimes. And I don't want this to be about your personal grief, but I want this to be about your triumph over grief and how you overcame it so our listeners can understand it. So again, I want this to be about your triumph over adversity. I want this to be about your, and one of the ways you did that was to write a book. And that's a great way. I mean, people often write about the things they're having in their life, and that's their first book usually. And that's their story that they're putting in there. Is that what drove you that way?
It is. I took all of those things that were inside of me and wrote something completely fictional, of course. Like I didn't, 12 for 12 is called that because my character is like, 12 years of heartache, 12 acts to uncover the truth, you know, type of thing. But of course, you know, during that process, getting published and all that, like that is my triumph, because I feel like my version of success with that book is that if one single person feels less alone by what I've written, and I think that they will, because my character goes through a great healing arc, which I went through, and other people have told me as they read it that they feel that same as well. But more importantly, like, I feel like it adds to the world and it makes other people better. And that's what I love about my personal triumphs, is I believe that when you meet somebody, they should be better off for having met you than not. And so hopefully that's what my book can do for other people.
A person once said, it's not hard to write. All you have to do is slit your wrists and bleed.
Right.
You know, I'm mentioning that because that's literally what you did in your book. You literally bared your soul, even though it's a fictional thing. You did that. And so you allowed a large part of you to come out in that book.
I did. But do you know, I wasn't able to find a literary agent until I removed some of my old angry emotions from it. The character wasn't very likable until I had done that. So yeah. That was some feedback that I got from an editor that I met at a writer's conference. And it changed everything. So,
well, there you go. Yeah. I think the direct quote was, writing is easy, just open a vein and bleed. That was the, and the person that said that was a person by the name of Walter Wellesley Red Smith. And he wrote that quote back in 1949.
Oh, wow.
So it's not a new quote by any means, but it's certainly something that an author, a novelist, a person that wants to write a book needs to keep in mind, because no matter what you write, you have to give a large part of yourself. And I know Jack Canfield, who wrote one of the best series in the world called Chicken Soup for the Soul, put a large part of himself in that series, because without that, he would have not gotten to where he was.
I think that's true. People can sense when things are genuine, and I think that they pick up on those things, as opposed to someone who's just writing to try and make money. There was none of that for me. Just,
and people are under the false belief that you're going to make a lot of money from your writing. You're just going to put it out there and the world's going to gravitate to it. And that book is going to sell a gazillion copies. And it's just going to be something that's going to fly off the shelf. And that's not the process that people go through.
No, not at all. It's more like, let's turn in a good career for poverty. Yeah. If you're going to go that route full time.
Yeah, exactly. So really it becomes something that has to be your passion. It has to be something that you love to do. It has to be something that you want to do. But certainly for any would-be wannabe writers out there, don't think you're going to make a gazillion dollars off your book. It's something that you'll get your message out. You'll use it as a calling card. You'll use it to help people. But that's really what it should be.
I agree. And I feel like my wealth is different. What I would measure as my wealth is how many people can I uplift? I want to be a builder. Like, you can tear down a whole building that took years to build in a day. But I'd rather be someone who builds someone up when I meet them. I feel like I'm, but let's talk about your book for just a minute, shall we?
Sure.
So one of my rules is about, listening to your gut. And I've had times where, like, for example, I had to fire my top client because they were doing some shady business practices. And I'm a fraud examiner. I have to have a good reputation. And it almost put my business under. But I never once regretted that, because I let's talk about your non-negotiables for a minute. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those?
I think every book, everybody in their life, everything has to have non-negotiables in it. You really need to have things that you'll never negotiate on. They are the pillars of every business and your pillars of your life. You really have to know what you will and will not negotiate on. And so you should start with a list of those and never sway from those. Those are the cornerstone.
Exactly. So if you're ever in a situation and you feel like something is just off, but you're not sure, or there's a time pressure tactic going on there, feel free to walk away and say, I'll get back to you. Or if it goes against your belief system, just you will always regret not walking away from that. And do you know that client that I had to get rid of? I worked with their attorney a lot, and he tried very hard to persuade me not to leave or to let them go. But because I did, he really respected me. And because of it, he sent me more clients, and it actually came back to me in other ways to bless me, because I just wasn't going to negotiate those pillars. So agreed.
Well, Dawn, we're almost at the end of our time together. So how can people find out more about you and what you have to offer?
Well, I have a website, dawnjrasmussen.com. You can go on there and do a free fraud assessment of your company. I have a tip sheet that you can download for free with other ways to use the skills of a fraudster to get what you want in life and turn a little voodoo into some awesome magic in your life. And I would always just encourage, don't be afraid. Let your voice out. Ask for what you want. Just say it. People really respect that. So check me out. My book is available everywhere. So.
Excellent. Dawn, I can't tell you how much I enjoyed having your perspective and you on my show. I know you have a unique perspective, and I want you to share it with so many people. It truly is refreshing. It truly is novel. And it's truly about you and the things that you bring to the table.
Thank you so much, Dr. Laika. I've loved being here. I enjoy your works and your show.
Excellent. So, ladies and gentlemen, be sure to check out my website as well, Dr. Allen Laika. That's DrAllen Laika, LYCKA.com. And make sure you sign up for my Golden Pearl a Week so I can really make your life fantastic and make your life special as well. Bye for now. Have a fantastic day.
You've been listening to How to Live a Fantastic Life. Be sure and pick up a copy of Dr. Laika's book, The Secrets to Living a Fantastic Life, on Amazon.com. And you'll want to subscribe right here on this page so you don't miss a single episode. Have a fantastic day.